You may not be familiar with the name, but Edward Oscar Heinrich, an investigator from California, was also known as one of America's first forensic scientists. He spearheaded the invention of many of the forensic tools police still use today: blood spatter analysis, ballistics, lie detector tests, and the use of fingerprints as courtroom evidence. His uncanny knack for finding clues and establishing evidence and deducing answers earned him the nickname the American Sherlock Holmes, which happens to be the title of Kate Winkler Dawson's new book. Kate is a documentary producer whose work has appeared in the New York Times, PBS NewsHour, and Nightline, and she teaches journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. Kate Winkler Dawson joins us now to tell us more about American Sherlock: Murder, Forensics, and the Birth of American CSI. Welcome, Kate.
Hi, Tammy. Thanks for having me.
American Sherlock tells the story of Edward Oscar Heinrich, but can you tell us a little bit more about him?
Sure. So he was really unusual in his time period because he was formally trained as a forensic scientist. And most people weren't. Most experts he worked in 1910 till he died in 1953. So this is more than 40 years he was in this industry. And then during this time period, almost anyone could call themselves an expert in forensics. And there was no real way to test it because there weren't formal classes and there wasn't a certification program. He actually had professional training, which is what made him a Sherlock Holmes character. So he grew up in Tacoma, Washington, and his father died really unexpectedly and tragically, and it left Oscar with responsibility of being the sole provider for his mother and his two sisters. And so he dropped out of high school, and he became eventually a pharmacist by the time he was 18, which seems incredible, but he was brilliant, and he learned about making drugs and watching people, so sort of deduction. And also an interesting note, he said this is where his love of handwriting analysis began, because he had to decipher the horrible handwriting of the doctors who were issuing the prescriptions. And so he talked his way into UC Berkeley, despite not having a high school diploma, and he got a degree in chemistry, and he learned about every type of science at UC Berkeley. Again, this is unusual in this time period for somebody to have that much education. So he became a sanitation engineer. He became a chemical engineer. He became a police chief. And all of these things happened before he became a forensic scientist, before he was hired as an expert witness. So he's considered the first professional expert witness, somebody who had real credentials, who could actually analyze the evidence. And what made him most unusual, I think, is because he knew so many disciplines in forensics: botany, entomology, how bugs arrive to a corpse, forensic geology, bloodstain pattern analysis, fingerprinting, all of these things. He knew them all, and he knew them very well, so he could walk into a crime scene, like maybe just a normal shooting death, and not just look at the ballistics, but he could look at the entire crime scene and come up with, 10 different tests that he could run to just give police a fuller picture of what actually happened.
We talk about forensics when we're talking about this. Was that an old term, or is that more of a new term? I mean, did he call himself a forensic scientist, during
his work? He did not.
Okay.
No, he did not. So I had thought about that actually last night. So he has sort of a sidekick, a Watson-type character named John Boynton Kaiser, who was a reference librarian in Tacoma. And John Boynton Kaiser and Oscar were trying to come up with what was his title. He was a college professor. He taught, criminology and criminalistics at UC Berkeley for decades, but he didn't want to be a professor. He didn't want to call, Boynton says, Kaiser says, you're not a chemist. You're more than a chemist. And so they settled on criminalist, which I'm not sure Heinrich was completely pleased with, because quite frankly, he didn't love being in the criminal world. He liked being a star. He loved being respected. He liked solving cases. But I think he really disliked criminals, and he didn't like most police officers. So you know, I think criminalist is what he settled on, but no, nobody called themselves forensic scientists. And nobody even said the word forensic then.
Heinrich is not a majorly well-known historical figure, so how did you learn about him?
So my first book was called Death in the Air, and it was about a deadly air pollution disaster in London and a serial killer stuck in it. And so I had covered science before, and I love how science can be intermingled with murder. And so I decided I wanted my next book to be forensics. So I grew up in my dad's law school classes at the University of Texas. And so this was sort of, I felt like it was in my DNA. And so I just went and bought a book on an encyclopedia on criminals, which sounds like a silly book to buy, but it was amazing for me. And I, you know, started from the Pilgrims and worked my way through, and I started, you know, wading my way through all of the gangsters in the 1920s, I ran across this great case, which was the Siskiyou train robbery, and it was a botched train robbery in 1923 in Oregon, and Oscar worked on the case, and in the story, it referred to him as America's Sherlock Holmes. And so anybody who's interested in mysteries or true crime or criminal justice is, of course, you know, your antenna is going to go up when you see that sort of phrase. So I was very excited to dig in and find out more about him. And I found out he has a massive collection at UC Berkeley. Thank goodness. It was incredible. It had all of his case files. It had his notes, his journals, his diaries, evidence that he shouldn't have kept. They found two or three pistols and they had to that were loaded, and they had to come and remove the firing pins because it was dangerous. I mean, he had bomb parts. It was a treasure trove is an understatement.
This is What We're Reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski. Here's the rest of our conversation on Kate Winkler Dawson's American Sherlock. In American Sherlock, you tell us about some of the important forensic innovations Oscar Heinrich was instrumental in bringing about, but you also hint at some really significant mistakes he made. Can you give us an example of one?
So, you know, another modern term that we've been using probably in the last couple of decades is called junk science. And so these are forensic science techniques that actually involve very little science. And it's called pattern matching. So things like fingerprints, you know, you take the fingerprint off of a glass of water that a suspect, you know, used, and then you compare that fingerprint perhaps to something, you know, a murder weapon that we know is a murder weapon, and you compare the two. So comparing things like fiber, like fingerprints, like shoe prints, like bite marks, all of these things are subjective. They're really, it comes down to the opinion of the expert who is looking at them. And Heinrich really believed that handwriting analysis was definitive. If you write something on a piece of paper, I can compare it to a, you know, different document, and I can tell you whether you're the one who signed it or not. Well, now we know it's just not true, that different things can affect our handwriting. Environments, medicine maybe we're even taking. I mean, there are so many variables. It could be your age. You know, do you have arthritis? And so it's unreliable. Same thing with fingerprinting. And if you think about, I really realized this when I was at the DMV a couple of months ago, and I was having my license renewed, my driver's license. And, you know, they have you do the fingerprint, and you put it on the glass, and it's, you know, for the state, it has to be a very high-quality fingerprint.
Right.
It took me four times to get the fingerprint right, my thumbprint. So think about that. If that is the high standard that the state of Texas is holding for the quality of a thumbprint, how are you going to get a similar quality thumbprint or fingerprint off of a glass of water? They're going to be smeared. It's not going to be pushed in enough. You're not going to be able to see the ridges well enough. And yet we're still using this type of evidence. And it's not been, you know, something that has been discredited in courts. And Heinrich developed fingerprint evidence. And as you'll read, one of his biggest cases was Fatty Arbuckle, who was a silent film star who went on trial for manslaughter for, you know, killing a woman accidentally during a party. And the evidence that Heinrich used was absolutely bad evidence. And yet the outcome of many trials that he was involved with were in his favor because he was so convincing. And that's dangerous as an expert who is convincing in court, who's using bad science. So he developed all of these amazing tools, ballistics and chemistry and toxicology, but he also developed some junk science that I don't think they didn't realize it back then. They thought a fingerprint is a fingerprint. They thought it was really easy using trigonometry to predict how tall a suspect is using blood spatter, and that it's just not the case. Now we know that. They didn't then.
True crime and crime solving and forensics, TV shows and books and movies, they're all very popular. Case in point, you love your book on criminals that you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Why are we so fascinated with the subject?
Well, you know what's interesting? I don't know if a lot of folks know this, but women are the largest audience for true crime, which seems even more unusual. I'm a woman who writes about generally men killing women, and I love true crime. And you would think that that is counterintuitive, but it's just not. I think that women specifically, but larger audiences are fascinated. It's like that voyeurism thing. I know a friend of mine likens it to sci-fi. It's kind of the same thing. Why do we love sci-fi? Because it takes you into a world that hopefully, fingers crossed, none of us will be involved with. It teaches you lessons. Like, you can watch something on television, like a Dateline NBC, or you can read a true crime book, and you can see what someone did wrong. Not to blame a victim, but, you know, what I would have not done in that situation. And it maybe in some weird way helps prepare you. My mom, who is 76, loves true crime. And I asked her one time, why do you like this so much? You know, I love it. I know why I love it, but why do you like it so much? She thinks it's going to prepare her. I don't know for what. If she thinks the serial killer is going to be in her closet and she's going to be able to figure out how to get away based on whatever she's watching on 48-hour mysteries. But I think that is that way of thinking. And I hate to admit it, but in my part, it's a little bit more of, better than me in some ways. Like, boy, I'm glad that didn't happen to me. I'm glad I didn't marry that person, or I would have never done that trip, or, you know, whatever it is. And so I think it's complicated, but it is a genre that just continues to grow and grow and grow.
That's Kate Winkler Dawson. Her new book is American Sherlock, Murder, Forensics, and the Birth of American CSI. And it is truly fascinating. Thank you so much for talking with me today, Kate.
Thank you, Tammy. I appreciate it.